Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's Q&A with Layla. I'm here today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and we're answering your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll endeavor to answer as many of them as we can. And what's our next question, Layla?
Okay, our next question comes from Lindsay, who's a female, and she has a tooth root infection and was told she needs a root canal or an extraction, neither of which she wants. So she's wondering if taking lots of olive leaf extract can help her with that tooth root infection, and she could avoid doing either.
The answer in a word is no, because tooth root infections are they're very tenacious. They're deep into the tooth, which is very inaccessible to antibiotics. That's why the most potent antibiotics only somewhat knock back these infections, and then they'll sometimes do a root canal, clean it out. But the infections sometimes stay deep within the tiny crevices and canals of your teeth, and they can cause chronic problems. So my recommendation, root canal doesn't solve the problem, but an extraction will. You know, taking it out. And I was faced precisely with that dilemma many years ago. It was probably 20, 25 years ago. I just had the tooth taken out because, you know, it's a rotten tooth. Let's say a little bit about olive leaf extract. Olive leaf is a wonderful natural antibacterial, antifungal, and it may have antiviral capabilities.
Right.
It contains something called oleuropein, which is a potent, it's a source of D-linalate, which is the active antibiotic ingredient. It was actually researched by a major pharmaceutical company, and then they said, well, you know, we can't really patent this because it's a natural substance, and they went on to develop synthetic antibiotics. But they left the information about the patent as a public record, and somebody came along and rediscovered it and then repopularized olive leaf as a natural antibiotic. So we use it. Wow. It's helpful for sinusitis. It's helpful for many itises. Diverticulitis.
It's also good for blood pressure, and it's good to stabilize blood sugar. So that there are actually many uses. It's wonderful for acne.
Yes,
it's part of our acne treatment regimen.
Right, we sell boatloads of that to adolescent kids who take 6 or 9 a day for acne. So it can be helpful.
And great during cold and flu season. So that's one of the best times to take olive leaf.
Absolutely.
Oh, but good luck with your tooth, Lindsay.
Mm. Yeah. Say goodbye to your tooth.
This next question comes from Kevin. Dear Dr. Hoffman, my wife, 62 years old, was told she has a cholesterol of 280. The doctor immediately prescribed Crestor. The doctor stated it had nothing to do with diet or exercise. It was all age-related. Is it time to change doctors? I love this question.
Yes, sir. I love it when doctors really... You know, it's like the KISS principle. It's like, look, keep it simple, stupid. You know, your cholesterol is high. You got to go on a statin. No, you can't fix it with diet. And that's just what happens when you get older.
Yeah. Oh, my.
You know, here's an interesting fact is that if you look at the average person in a Neolithic tribe, you know, like such, which are disappearing, but, you know, like look at the average Amazon Indian. You know, I went to the Museum of Natural History the other day.
Love that.
A couple of years ago. And they're showing an exhibit about the Amazon, which is fascinating, and the Amazon tribes. And then it has little film, which was done, you know, quite a few years ago. It's in black and white. It was probably done in the 50s. And it shows a man with his son walking through the jungle, and they've got blowguns, and they're hunting monkeys because they eat monkeys. It's very cute because the guy is showing his son how to use the blowgun to fire a paralytic dart at the monkey who's way up in the tree. So this is like an amazing feat, and it actually takes several shots to paralyze the monkey because it kind of wing the monkey and it doesn't miss the monkey. But finally, the monkey is like hit with enough of these paralytic darts, which are made from curare, which is a natural plant down there, and so finally the monkey just falls out of the tree, but he's caught up in a high branch. So the father, gestures to his son, and he goes like this. He points up to the tree, and he starts shimmying up the tree. And the guy is, you know, they're not wearing a lot. You know, they wear like a little loincloth.
Uh-huh.
And the guy looks like he is like everybody's dream of what you would look like if you worked out in CrossFit for years.
Brick house.
Right. He is like, and he's going up that tree like nobody's business. Like there's no steps on the tree. There's no cleats. He's just barefoot, and he's like shimmying up this tree. So barefoot. He comes down, and he has this monkey, and he's so proud, and then they go walking back to the village. So I look at the caption on the thing, and I read it, and it says, "A child and his grandfather are hunting." Oh. So even if they're reproducing at like the guy has to be, you know, the child is like 8, you know, even if they're like pretty, you know, so we're talking.
It's got to be over 50. Probably.
Possibly, you know, late 40s, early 50s. So how did I get started on this tangent is talking about cholesterol is it, they say, okay, it just gets older. I mean, it gets higher as you age. Well, that they said that about blood pressure. Blood pressure just gets higher as you age. Well, it does in this culture, but if you have the good fortune to evade starvation and disease, or being attacked by a wild animal,
from infection,
and a lot of these people die young in these societies, you could have a blood pressure that's perfect when you're 60 or 65 with a cholesterol of 140.
Mm. That's too low.
Well, I'm saying, these are people who live in not in conditions of plenty, in conditions of near starvation.
Yeah. Wow.
So I don't opt for that. So that's a long way of answering this question. And you know, should she go on? She might need to go. I'm not precluding the possibility she needs to go on a statin, but she should come to a nutritionally oriented physician like we do, and get an EBT heart scan. We talked about that earlier,
right?
And assess whether that has any strong implications in terms of cardiovascular risk.
Yeah.
If she has a lot of plaque, maybe. But I'll leave it to you. Does cholesterol have anything to do with diet?
Not that much, because the liver cranks out 80% of the cholesterol we need.
Honest answer is nutritionist.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. I mean, the thing is, cholesterol is actually classified as an antioxidant.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of all of our phospholipid membranes. We were talking about the brain earlier. It's at least 40% of our brain. It's necessary.
Right.
And this total number at 280, that doesn't really tell us much either.
Because there's no HDL.
Yeah.
She might have an HDL of 105 for all
right. And if the LDL is high, is it a pattern A or is it a pattern B?
You know, I think I'm going to go start practicing conventional medicine because it is so easy. It's simple. It's just your cholesterol's high, you take a statin.
Just follow the guidelines.
And then the patient asks you for dietary advice and you say, don't worry about that. The diet's not... I could skip.
Go have ice cream.
I could see 60 people a day that way.
Go eat French fries. Here's your cholesterol.
Right.
I have one of my relatives was talking about. There are so many of them. Dr. Hoffman are on Lipitor, and many have had a lot of stents and bypass. And I have an aunt who was saying, "Well, we're eating this food and we're eating all this dough food now. It's a holiday and." We're having cake, so we're going to take a little more Lipitor. today.
You know, that's actually, that's interesting. That's actually
a running joke in my family.
To me, is one of the downsides of that, because, you know, the term moral hazard, it's like, you know, they were talking about moral hazard, you know, when they say the banks are too big to fail. You know, they say, don't worry, you can do all this. We'll subsidize you. The government will subsidize you. That means...
With our tax dollars.
Which might underwrite very shady, improper, risky business practices.
Mm-hmm.
But in effect, we are eliminating the moral hazard from poor lifestyle, because what's the point? I mean, the medication is virtually free for a lot of people. And it's easy, it's readily prescribed. In fact, the doctors would... want most people to be on statins. They actually believe so strongly in statins, they'd say the majority of people over 50 should have it.
Are they still getting kickbacks on such prescriptions, do
you
think?
There's a certain amount of that, but, you know, less and less, because that's actually why it's very frustrating to doctors. At least they used to be able to profit from either selling drugs or getting subsidies from drug companies.
Mm-hmm.
There are various ways to make it legal, like the drug companies will take you to a dinner at a nice steakhouse.
Or send you to Hawaii or something for vacation.
To a conference, or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you will present a paper, you know, and they'll pay for it. But in a way, that is a reward for being a champion prescriber of an expensive drug.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, now there are lots of laws that sort of are precluding that.
Good.
And, you know, I'll tell you, it's frustrating to me to see that, not that I get kickbacks, but I look at other professions. Like when a lawyer refers someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody comes in and says, you know, I broke my leg in a pothole, you know, and the lawyer says, look, I can send you to my colleague. He specializes. He sues the city, you know, that negligence cases. That lawyer gets a third just for the referral.
Wow.
Doctors, there are fewer and fewer ways for doctors to make shady money,
mm-hmm.
which is good,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like these poor doctors are break, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I think they've started to define medicine mm-hmm. as a criminal enterprise a priori. And, you know, prove to us that you're not crooks.
Yeah. Terrible.
But, you know, I think in some ways medicine has gotten what it deserves. And, you know, there's so many abuses and that now they're just trying to shut off the spigot of corruption.
Right, right. Insurance companies don't pay enough either. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I'll tell you another thing on insurance mm-hmm. companies. There's not a week that goes by that I don't get something from an insurance company saying, I see that you're treating such and such a patient for high cholesterol. We recommend that you put the patient on, you know, a statin drug. And then there's a checklist. Why haven't you done this? A, I haven't gotten around to doing it. I will do it. B, I disagree with your conclusion. C, the patient refuses to take it. I have to tell the insurance companies why I don't put patients on statins.
That's ridiculous. That would make my blood boil.
I know, it does.
And physicians aren't allowed to practice medicine anymore.
No, it's the insurance company's telling me, like, you know, doctor, are you sure that you want to let this patient not be in a statin? Because we see that they have a high cholesterol.
I guess the insurance company is afraid that that person's going to have a heart attack and then they're going to have to pay out more money for their hospitalization. What do you think is behind that? Or is it just a matter of the guidelines?
It's a matter of guidelines. It's also, I think, the wrongful belief that this is going to result in major cost savings to them.
Mm.
But also, they have been sold by, I mean, there's, I think, collusion between the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance companies. That, you know, the
insurance companies are counting on medicine to be higher priced than ever, just to keep that cycle going, just so...
Insurance companies have to offer a product, and people expect medication. And if you have an insurance company that won't pay for your medication, who needs that insurance company?
Right.
You know, so it's part of their mandate to make sure that people take a lot of medication, because mm-hmm. That's what you're getting subsidized for.
Yeah.
That's their job. And whether it's the government that's paying for it or individuals are paying for it, I mean, ultimately, we all pay for it.
Right,
but,
right.
I'm paying very high premiums so that other people can be told by the insurance company to be on a statin.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
My premiums have gone through the roof, by the way. My premiums have soared.
Really?
My personal premiums, they're just way high.
Yeah, and they're only going to go up. And now, with even the health insurance that you're offering us, thank you, Dr. Hoffman, by the way, that's gone up, and the deductibles are starting to go. Why pay for any insurance if your deductible is going to be $12,000?
Well,
I'm not going to spend that much money unless I get hit by a truck.
I'll tell you what, you know, that's in a way the true meaning of insurance, because, and I do believe in high deductible insurance, because I think that for the relatively minor stuff, I think people, in effect, should allocate the money for
allocate
that.
Allocate the money.
But, you know, here's
we
an
need
instance.
To go back to the days of major medical.
Right.
Catastrophic insurance, and you pay for your doctor
here's
visit.
Here's an instance. I had insurance. I had insurance years, years, years. I never used it at all. Nothing. Never went to the doctor. Then it broke my hip.
Mm.
All of a sudden, $65,000.
Yeah.
For super expert care and a hospital stay.
Yeah.
I was happy that I had insurance.
Yeah.
You
know. Wow.
That's,
I'm surprised it was only $65,000. Wow.
Well, you know.
All right.
I mean, I didn't have a...
That, I remember that.
You know,
okay.
I didn't have a brain transplant.
No. Crestor will do that for you. Sorry.
Right.
Statins will do that for you.
Right.
Oh, boy. Best of luck, Kevin. So get it all checked out.
Sorry,
for
Kevin.
Your
we
wife.
Got off a little tangent there. Your doctor got us kind of riled up.
Oh. Do we have time for...
Indeed.
Great. We have another Marianne. writing to us, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, my cousin, 68-year-old female, is suffering with tinnitus. She went for acupuncture, which was fine. It did relieve it. However, it has returned, but it's not as bad as it was originally. She's taking ginkgo. She's taking lipoflavonoid. Is there anything else she could do about this?"
It's tough. You know, I've seen actually lipoflavonoid advertised on TV. It's a product that we used to stock here at the Hoffman Center. One of the reasons I don't like to stock it is I'm not happy with some of the additives and ingredients
in it. Yes, colorings and things.
Colorings, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it could have been a much cleaner product, but it is at least certain flavonoids that are fat soluble, which is important. It gets into the nervous system. That's you know, that's why it's called lipo. That's like fat. Flavonoids that are possibly accessible to the blood-brain barrier, which is impermeable to water-soluble substances. So ginkgo, yeah, okay. But, you know, I think tinnitus is one of those challenging things where there may be a multitude of causes. There may be a dietary element. Sometimes getting rid of a food that you're allergic to helps.
That helps a lot of people tremendously.
Yep, that's
and people with blood sugar issues, hypoglycemia can cause a ringing in your
Absolutely,
head.
Absolutely, yes.
It could be a classic symptom, actually, besides tremor and all that.
And there are occasional patients who have salicylate sensitivity. You know, aspirin causes tinnitus, and there are salicylates in foods, so we sometimes can identify that as a food-related cause. This problem is not always food-related. There's a limit, I think, to what nutrition can do with tinnitus.
Yeah.
You know, I think tinnitus is a reflection of the noise pollution that we're always subject to, is that we really damage our hearing apparatus intentionally and unintentionally. You know, we subject our ears to just unacceptable levels of sound.
Yeah. I guess, well, all right. Continuing acupuncture is probably a good thing.
I think there may be some benefit to acupuncture,
yeah. Oh, best of luck, Marianne.
We're time for one more quick question, if such there be.
Okay. Oh, this is... might be a long one. From Sandy, dear Dr. Hoffman, my hero, and Layla, can you kindly shed some light on lupus and perhaps recommend beneficial supplements for people with
this? That's a long one. But lupus, a couple of things that lupus really responds well to. First of all, paleo diet, you know, great for autoimmunity. High dose vitamin D, great for autoimmunity. And almost invariably in lupus, we see very low levels of vitamin D. The new think on that is that the low vitamin D may not be the cause, it may be a consequence of the inflammation.
Yes.
However,
which is very interesting.
But, you know, some people say don't give vitamin D because it's a false lowering. Actually, vitamin D has been shown to have an immune modulating effect, so it should be given. And rheumatologists know this. More and more rheumatologists are checking patients for vitamin D. Lots of fish oil. Fish oil will really help to reduce the inflammation.
Modicare.
DHEA, one of the few proven medical benefits of DHEA, which is controversial. I think it's great stuff for a variety of reasons. But in terms of the true medical indications for DHEA is lupus. In one study at Stanford, they gave 200 milligrams of DHEA, which we never give such high doses because you can get, you know, male-like side effects when you're going to facial hair and acne and hair loss as a woman. But 200 milligrams of DHEA really helped the lupus. And so we might give a woman 25 or 50 in lupus. I suggest you don't take DHEA on your own. You should get it monitored by a doctor.
You do like to see higher serum levels, however, right? Don't you? In autoimmunity, such as lupus?
Yeah. But those are the keys. You know, that's sort of at least half of what you ought to be doing.
Yeah.
But I think lupus is a great, great case for nutritional intervention.
Paleo diet, plus you can consider removing the nightshades.
That too,
the
yes.
Nightshade family vegetables, tomatoes, eggplant, peppers of all kind, including cayenne and paprika, and white potatoes, and tobacco.
Right. And heal the gut. And
heal the gut.
Because there's
heal
really
and often seal the gut.
A gut component to that. There may be a candida, bacterial overgrowth, leaky gut syndrome.
Trigger autoimmunity.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, great question.
Yeah, so, and we'll do you know, a clinical focus on lupus soon, we want to focus on the issue of autoimmunity in 2015 because it's an important issue and it can be really addressed via natural medicine. So that's all the time that we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And if you have additional questions, please email us your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Please make your questions simple and succinct, because we cannot troubleshoot complicated medical dilemmas. That's what we do in the office at the Hoffman Center. And you can see me. You'll also get to see Layla if you see me, or if you already have a physician. You know, like Obama says, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, but go see Layla in addition, because she'll provide a nutritional perspective.
Did Obama say that?
He doesn't want to. He's not too happy about the fact that that was on videotape in the era of Facebook.
No, I meant, did he say that about me?
No, he didn't say that about you. In fact, I'm not sure how the federal government feels about you. But that would be a compliment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.